You're listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. It is 4 p.m. Israel time. I bet it's a different time that you're used to listening to us, because in the United States and perhaps other places in the world, you have changed your clocks, while Israel has not changed our clocks yet. And so everything that you're listening to may be off an hour. So please be aware of that for any of our live shows that you want to tune into. Today, we're going to be talking about, mainly, we're going to be talking about what does the United States government really want from Israel? Plus, we're going to be having a Purim message, as the Jewish holiday of Purim is coming up next week, and we will not be doing a live show on Sunday because that is the Purim holiday. So you'll be hearing a repeat of this show. So next week you can take off and have your coffee, your Sunday morning coffee if you're listening from overseas, with some other podcast that you'd like to listen to that you've maybe missed. All right. And just a few news headlines here I wanted to read that's happened over the last several days. By the way, I usually don't share personal stuff that's happening with me. I usually don't do that, but it's good news, and why not? So you've all heard me talk about two of my sons that were serving and fighting in Gaza, one in Jabalia, that's in the northern part of Gaza, and one in Khan Yunis, which is in the central part. And now, as you all know, that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wants to make an Operation Rafah, which is on the border between Gaza and Egypt. Egypt has sealed its gates shut, not letting any of the Gazans there leave. But we have heard the stories, some of the stories about what they have seen, and we know the sacrifices that we've made down there. Two of my sons in the past month or so, thank God, were released for the time being. They'll be going back in when they're called up again. But in the meantime, one of my sons happened, but he got married. And first he got engaged. He took the time out to get engaged. Then he had to go back into fighting in Gaza again. And we were all praying, please God, he should survive. He should be able to get married. And thank God we did have a marriage last week. And it was a wonderful, happy occasion. And I wanted to share all of that with you, that another Israeli soldier gets married and will, God willing, build a Bayit Ne'aman b'Yisrael. He will build a home here in Israel and establish a family, and it'll be a wonderful thing. So that's some good news why I've been busy lately. And but I wanted to talk about other news that's happening now. And I took this from NBCnews.com, and their title is, if you haven't already heard the story, by the way, is that Chuck Schumer calls for new elections in Israel, criticizing Netanyahu's leadership. As the highest-ranking Jewish official in the United States, the majority leader said that the Senate floor said on the Senate floor that, quote, the Netanyahu coalition no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th, unquote. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for telling us Israeli citizens what fits our needs. I have one answer to you, and that is chutzpah. And I have some more news headlines I'm going to read, but first I want to bring on our guest, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem. He co-hosts the show with me, and Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem is a researcher, former lecturer at Ben-Gurion University. He has authored over 90 books and 400 research papers on science, history, and more. He commentates on Mideast and world issues, and I want to welcome to the show Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem.
Thank you. By the way, just in connection with Purim, before we get started, tomorrow I'm supposed to give a major lecture at one of the central yeshivot in the center of the country about the issue of historical anti-Semitism. And, of course, the Purim story is just simply the beginning of that story.
Absolutely. When you have that terrible character, Haman, or Haman in Hebrew. And but I want to get back to the news here, because we are going to talk about Purim just a little bit later in the show. So my answer to the United States government that is saying that Netanyahu, this coalition, no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th. I'm not going to argue that point because there are a lot of things to say and investigations have to be done. But the fact that they are treating the United Israel like a banana republic, telling us who we have to have in office or not have in office, that when we have to go to elections or not. My answer, one word, chutzpah. What is your answer?
Mine? Bronx cheer.
Okay.
You know what a Bronx cheer is?
Yes. Something like that, right? Something like an Archie Bunker answer for those who are old enough to know who Archie Bunker is. All right.
Well, that's enough, but I don't really know who he is. But I mean, I just heard the name. I've never experienced that nonsense, but okay.
So
basically my whole story today is about that. So we'll get to that really later, but the it's much more than chutzpah. I mean, their demand basically is to cancel democracy. So all of their fatuous claims about them spreading democracy around the world is actually a total lie. What they want to do, what they desire to do, what they try to do is cancel democracy everywhere that it exists.
Even in their own country, unfortunately. Well, the left. And this is the left, which is running the United States right now under the Biden administration. And that's my opinion. I think it's a lot of people's opinion. But let me read you here from Arut Sheva. IsraelNationalNews.com, it says here, Netanyahu, and then he says, Schumer's comments were totally inappropriate. During an interview with CNN, the Israeli Prime Minister discussed comments by the U.S. Senate Majority Leader calling for new elections and referring to him as a threat to peace. You know, I have a lot I can say against Prime Minister Netanyahu and some of the moves that he's made, the decisions he's made, the way that he has focused what he thinks is important. I have a lot to say about that. But regardless, he's done some good things as well. But regardless of all of the negative things I believe he has done, it is none of the business of the United States government to tell the Israeli citizens who we should pick as our prime minister and our government, etc. Go ahead.
Well, it's obvious that you're very correct. But the whole point of the thing is that they do not believe that Israelis or anyone has the right to choose their government or their leadership.
Netanyahu says in this article that whether elections were held or not in Israel was something that, quote, the Israeli government does on its own. He emphasized, quote, it's inappropriate to go to a sister democracy and try to replace the elected leadership. Netanyahu added that it was up to the Israeli public to decide whether Israel should hold elections. After the Israeli-Hamas war is over, he goes on to say that if we were to go to elections, it would put Israel on a status of non-action for 6 months, perhaps, or for several months until we had a new government in place and that could act. And that would mean that we would lose the war. Let me just read this quote. He says, quote, if we were to have elections now before the war is won, resoundingly won, we would have at least 6 months of national paralysis, which means we would lose the war. Well, right now, I would say Israel is losing the war, and I would say that the international community is forcing that to happen as long as our leadership acquiesces to the demands and the pressures of the outside world of the international community. Because who would ever think that you would feed and fuel under the guise of humanitarian aid the enemy? And that the world says that the Gazan population should be our first concern, their security and their safety, is absolutely ridiculous. That's like telling the Allies that they have to fuel and feed the Nazis in order to have the German citizenry, their foremost concern in World War II, which is crazy, nonsense, and evil.
Well, I agree with your basic statement, but I think that we are winning the war. I do not think that we are losing the war, and I think we will complete the job. I think your statement that you believe us to be losing the war is mistaken, but okay, we'll see.
Well, let me, I didn't say that we're going to lose the war. I'm saying we're losing the war by fueling and feeding our enemy, because they could have been on their knees already begging for an unconditional surrender on their side. They could have done that.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I mean, okay. We could have completed this at least 2 months ago had the United States actually supported and not interfered.
Now,
there's no doubt about that at all. No one has any doubt about that.
All
United
right.
States, every time Joe Biden or his moron sidekick Blinken opens their mouths with some new stupidity like some of the things that you just said, that makes Hamas more strong. Absolutely correct.
Okay.
And that makes the whole issue of the hostages it just delays it every time.
Okay. And as you know, I try to be very fair with our government here in Israel. And I'll say a good point here about the Prime Minister of Israel, in that he is pushing against the will of the international community, which does not want us to do this. But he is standing strong on this, and God should bless him and keep him strong in this. And he is going to make an operation, a military operation in Rafah. This is where we believe a lot of our hostages are being held. And in this headline, if you want to go check it out, it's on IsraelNationalNews.com. It says, quote, Netanyahu to the world, did you lose your moral compass so quickly? Unquote. Prime Minister says Rafah operation will happen. He asks the international community why the pressure is on Israel and not on Hamas, which started the war. Again, I want to remind all of our listeners, this war can end in a second if the Hamas were to surrender and hand us back our hostages. It would all be over, the war. But they don't. They continue to fight to try to kill us. They are continuing to bomb our cities and our towns. They are continuing to...
Our
citizenry, yes, our civilians, not army bases, but civilian targets. And they are still holding on to our men, women, children, elderly that they kidnapped, and they refused to give them over. The
136.
136 of them, that's right. And the ball is in their court to end this war. But instead, cleverly, they're crying the victim card. And there was a meme going around saying something like, if you start a war and are losing it, that doesn't make you the victims. It was something like that, but it was very, very true and really hit to the heart of the point here. The Hamas is bringing on and continuing the suffering of anybody that's in Gaza right now. It's all on their shoulders. They can end it in a minute, but they choose not to. And in the meantime, they have their propaganda of that starving Palestinians and Gazans, etc., which is ridiculous. I remember seeing pictures of starving Jews in the concentration camps in World War II. They were skin and bones, walking skeletons. You do not see footage like that, even on Al Jazeera, which would love to show you footage like that, because they don't have footage like that, because it is not true. So I present this case to you. People should know it all lies in the decision of the terrorists to surrender and give us back our kidnapped men, women, children, and elderly.
It's like the myth of the so-called refugee camps. These are not camps, and these are not refugee camps. These are suburbs. Some of them, many of them, have apartments which may cost as much as $1 million shekels to purchase.
Beachfront property, rooms bigger than my house has, huge rooms, huge bedrooms.
Luxury apartments. Gazans actually went on strike a few years ago because somebody had the gall to offer them a flats which are less than 180 meters in size.
Okay, there you go. There's another point there. Let's see. I'll read another couple of headlines here from IsraelNationalNews.com. Schumer's comments were totally inappropriate, says the prime minister in an interview with CNN. And also, imagine if Schumer told the United Kingdom to oust their prime minister. That's what former Senator Lieberman from the United States says. Can you imagine if they told Schumer, if Schumer told the UK, the United Kingdom, to oust their prime minister? It's chutzpah. It's absolute chutzpah, disrespect. And why our leadership is still afraid to not listen to the international community, is still buckling under the threats and the pressure. And there are threats and pressure. I can imagine they're great, what they're telling the prime minister. We're not going to sell you any more bullets or ammunition or whatever it is. You better do what we say or else. I can understand it, but that's why we need someone who's strong enough to say no and be more afraid of God and than he is of the O'Biden administration. That's what people are calling him now. Not Biden, but O'Biden, because he's a continuation of Obama. And, yeah, do you want to add anything before we go on to your
topic?
Well,
unfortunately, and this you'll probably disagree with this statement, but unfortunately, right now, Bibi Netanyahu is the only one who has the force of will and the international cachet to be able to stand up to these kinds of pressures.
Well, that's why I said God should continue to bless him with the courage to do the right thing. And I do tip my hat at this point what he's doing. We need to go into Rafah. Again, I want to remind people, Rafiah or Rafah, that they call it different names. This is an area that's on the border with Egypt, and this is where...
Straddles the border.
Yes.
Two-thirds of it is in the Gaza Strip. One-third of it is in Egypt.
Okay, and Egypt is holding the gates shut tight, and the Hamas, we believe that a lot of our hostages may be being held in Rafah, and so we are, under the Netanyahu government, going to plan, and rightfully so, an operation there.
And for people to understand, when Tamar says that Egypt is holding it closed, they have more than a battalion of troops on that border, standing there with machine guns for anyone who attempts to make the escape, quote unquote, from Gaza.
So they'll gun down these people, in other words, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Because they don't want them in there, and they want it to be Israel's problem. This is not Israel's problem to solve. And there, it should not be a slogan, again, I'm going to say this, I've said it in a past show, it should not be a slogan of bring them home, meaning the hostages. It should be a slogan of let them go. Bring them home means it's our responsibility. Israel, it's Israel's fault that they're there, when it should be the focus for the world should be to the Hamas, let them go. These are terrorists. They have kidnapped innocent men, women, and children, old elderly people, babies. Many have died being held there.
About a third of them have already died.
We don't even know how many have died, actually. It could be more. Could be. I don't know. But the women, they say, those who have been freed, that they're being sexually abused. And I don't want to go more into that, but you all know what I'm talking about. Maybe some of the men as well. And it is a living hell. But the world should be demanding for justice. If the world were moral, they would be demanding that Hamas release these innocent civilians, release these innocent people that they kidnapped so dastardly. Let me just read a few more headlines, and then we'll go to your topic. IDF planes strike 4 Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. I want people to understand, again, that as red alert sirens come in, not only are we being attacked still from Gaza and the Hamas and the terrorists there, but also on Israel's northern border with Lebanon and even Syria, we are getting infiltrations of aerial drones and things like that. We are getting rocket fire in our communities in the north. So we're getting sirens, red alert sirens in the north of attacks, and red alert sirens of attacks in the south as well. So again, the IDF has struck back, and it's a back and forth on a kind of low burner, although we did have over 100 rockets that were launched at Israel last week in just one day. IDF plane strike four Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. Also, Schumer's comments I read before were totally inappropriate. And I guess those are the biggest headlines I want to read out now. All right, so let's go back to the main thing, which everybody here is talking about. Israel's talking about it, of course, and so is the international community when it comes to trying to twist Israel's arm. And that is, what does the U.S. government really want from Israel? Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem.
Well, everybody knows that historically no empire survives without intelligence, and I mean that in both kinds of intelligence. And we all know that the U.S., the so-called intelligence community of the United States that declared that the laptop was Russian until everybody knew that it wasn't, and assured us that the Taliban were finished, and then one day after the Americans left Afghanistan, the Taliban, the so-called Finnish Taliban were already in charge again. They just announced this past week that Netanyahu is about to be overthrown. They have clear evidence in their 2024 intelligence report, they claim, that was reported in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, that Netanyahu is about to be overthrown by massive demonstrations. Of course, this is total nonsense.
Absolute nonsense.
Yeah. Even the most left-wing polls in Israel show Netanyahu with a clear majority. Despite the lies promulgated by the U.S. media, Netanyahu and his government has a clear majority. There is no doubt about that to anybody. One of the things that people need to understand overseas, outside of Israel, is that the Israeli public is phenomenally united behind this government and behind what it's doing. Remember, the government right now is a unity government, including parts of the left. It's not just a right-wing government. Again, lies that are being told to you by the U.S. media. It is not the most right-wing government in the history of the country. That is a simple stupidity of phenomenal lies. Gantz is not of the right wing. He's part of the government. He's part of the security cabinet. And also, the idea that Gantz is about to take over is ridiculous, because just three days ago, a third of his party split from his party. A full third of his party split out. So he had 12 seats. He's down to 8 now. He's getting weaker as time goes on, and he's not getting stronger, and Netanyahu is. So all of this stuff is just really ridiculous nonsense. What feeds the U.S. intelligence agencies is only their own wishful thinking. More than 80% of Israeli citizens severely distrust the PA and support the right-wing parties, from Likud and farther to the right. Note, I said Israelis. That includes its Arab citizens, who are nearly 20% of the population. Even they do not want any connection with the Palestinian Authority. I remind people, more than 30 Bedouin received special citations for fighting Hamas on the 7th of October. And these were civilians that went to the border to help to fight the intrusion that came from Gaza. The Arab citizens of Israel, whether Bedouin or other Arabs, despise Hamas totally. And this needs to be understood, because, again, the U.S. media is just lying. I have to remind people that the so-called Palestinian Authority security forces have been a United States project since 2005, begun by Condoleezza Rice and General Keith Dayton. Totally failed project. A vast portion, we don't have the exact numbers, of the terrorist attacks that have occurred over the past 10 years have been by people that were trained by the United States, trained and armed by the United States. Now these same folks have decided to try economic sanctions against individual Israeli citizens and against some settlements. Again, you know, we've all seen how phenomenally successful American sanctions have been against Russia in the Ukraine war. Phenomenally successful the sanctions have been against Iran.
You're being sarcastic, of course.
Yeah. American sanctions have failed time after time after time. They always fail. Even if the idea is a reasonable idea, they don't know how to implement it. So what's happening right now is Israel's Minister of the Treasury, who Tamar likes and I don't like, but I don't dislike him. I just don't think he's all that good. I think he's sort of wishy-washy.
Who is that?
But you like him.
Who?
Smotrich.
I don't care for Smotrich. I don't know why you got that idea that I like
him.
Oh,
I thought you did. Okay, no, sorry. No.
Ben-Gvir, I appreciate.
I see. Okay. Okay, I don't particularly care for either of them, but that's okay. That's a question of taste. Israel's Minister of the Treasury has actually done something really, really intelligent, really smart. People need to be aware that it's not so easy to do business with the so-called Palestinian Authority, even for things that are apparently straightforward. Because any major corporation of any kind that does significant business with the Palestinian Authority is liable to lawsuits from civilians that have been harmed by this Palestinian Authority. So, for instance, if a so-called policeman or security forces, whatever, again, armed and trained by the United States, performs a terrorist act, or on a daily basis when the Palestinian Authority pays salaries of terrorists in prison who have already been convicted of murdering people. So the all of any company that's engaged in commerce with these things is liable to lawsuits. So some years ago, the Israeli government set up a special dispensation to insulate the Israeli companies from lawsuits from Israeli citizens. That was, with particular emphasis was on the two banks that are principally responsible for the transfer of funds and everything that includes the Bank Discount and Bank Hapoalim. The second and third, the third and second largest banks in Israel. This dispensation needs to be renewed every year. So it's come up for renewal, and Smotrich said, go find somebody else. I'm not going to sign it. What that means, it's a simple move, but it's really very, very smart. What it means is that no bank in Israel can do business with the Palestinian Authority. If no bank can do business with them, because that they're not, they would be unprotected, then the banks will sever all ties with the Palestinian Authority. The Minister's Act means an immediate freeze of all economic activity in the Palestinian Authority itself. All imports, all exports go through Israeli ports. The Palestinian Authority does not have any access to international trade other than through Israel. And of course, also the tax money that Israel collects for them is frozen until further notice because it cannot be physically transferred. So America's unintelligent morons that call themselves their intelligence community can tell Ramallah it's important to start to raise more rabbits because they won't have anything else to eat and maybe chop some wood for heating. Oops. Palestinians kill trees. We plant trees. So they don't even have wood for heating either. So they're in trouble. That's the result of American sanctions on Israeli citizens. The American sanctions on Israeli citizens have already backfired on what America really wants from Israel. That's pretty fast.
I lost you. Mordechai? There you are. Okay.
You're not hearing me?
No, now I hear you.
Oh, okay. So once again, American sanctions have proven how effective and intelligent they are by being totally ridiculous, ineffective, and stupid, and very, very easy, trivial to counter. By the way, Palestinian Authority documents, many of which, the majority of which, are available online in English, officially state that the United States government, the European Union, Germany, and France, and the United Nations, all knowingly and actively support terrorist groups in the Palestinian Authority. That's the Fatah, Al-Aqsa, Martyrs Brigade, Tanzim, and etc. Official Palestinian Authority documents that are online and anyone can look them up. All of them report that, as I said, the United States government, European Union, Germany, France, and the United Nations knowingly and actively support terrorist groups in the Palestinian Authority, as well as supporting payments to the shaheeds, the so-called martyrs that they have. So this is, you know, this is kind of so typical of what the American government today is doing. I listened to a discussion with a gentleman named Professor Richard Wolff. Very impressive. I had not heard of him before. He had a discussion about the question of whether the United States can be classified as an empire. And his response, quote, "Yeah, it is an empire, and yeah, it is failing," unquote. So let's be quite clear. Hamas knows it cannot defeat Israel militarily. It is convinced that Israel can be defeated only in Washington, not in Gaza. So Schumer and his destructive anti-Semitic narratives are just simply stupidity. And make no differentiation here. The fact that Schumer is ostensibly Jewish does not insulate him from being an anti-Semite. I can give you an entire list of Jewish anti-Semites around the world, and I have such a list in one of my books. There used to be education to know right from wrong. Now it's become knowing rape from wrong, or rape to wrong. As if this ridiculous blowhard has any right to demand negation of free democratic elections in the sovereign state of Israel. I'm sorry if I'm kind of disgusted, but Schumer kind of disgusts me.
So I want to make clear here also for all of our listeners that are from the United States that we're not anti-America at all. We appreciate the American people very much. It's the Biden administration that we're talking about, which I know perhaps even the majority of the Americans aren't for him. But I just wanted to make that clear that we love our American listeners. And
yeah, I thought I was clear to saying that this is, I'm talking about Biden, Blinken, Schumer. I'm not even talking about the Democratic Party anymore. These are just a group of nincompoops.
Well, powerful and dangerous people.
Yes, they also are. Very much so. They're very much so.
All right.
Just to shift the discussion, but in the same vein for the moment, just to finish up this whole issue of what's going on now between America and Israel right now, I need to give people perspective of what's really going on. So just some quick statistics here.
Please.
Americans are dying today as the U.S. is dying. In August 2022, provisional U.S. life expectancy estimates for 2021 were released showing Americans had lost nearly 3 years of life expectancy during 2020 and 2021.
And that is because now, of?
Well.
Diet?
I was just
GMOs?
Some people might say, well, that was because of the pandemic. If that was because of the pandemic, then that should have been recovered in 2022. It did not. The December 2022 final mortality rate reported these data in 2019. Average life expectancy of Americans of all ethnicities was 78.8 years. By the end of 2020, it dropped to 77 years. By the end of 2023, it was 76 years. Dr. Stephen Wolff told USA Today, quote, that means all the medical advances of the past quarter of a century have been erased. If you live in America and you want to remain in America, you need to be aware that you are going to die much more quickly, much earlier than if you had lived in Israel.
But they didn't give any reasons why?
Life expectancy here is well over 82 years.
They didn't give any reasons why?
No, that's not. This is just general statistics. Again, mm-hmm. if it had been the pandemic, then 2022, 2023 would have seen a recovery. There was no recovery. It was a continuation of the drop.
So, you know, then that merits looking into what has changed in the last few years. And
well, yes, but
and then of, from that process of elimination, perhaps people can put two and two together.
Again, I'm going to guess here, from knowing you for many decades now, that you want to blame the vaccination.
I don't know. I think that questions need to be asked, though.
I do know is that it has not recovered, and that is enormously significant.
Okay.
Just as a person who deals in statistics for the last 60 years of my life.
I just want to put this out that I don't like to assume, I like to know. But in order to know, one has to ask questions and one has to do some investigation. And that's where I am. That's why even with the whole onset of the forced, and I will say forced because they forced people to get vaccinated or they would possibly lose their jobs. They couldn't go into restaurants, cafes. They totally like locked down people, in a sense. But I like to know the facts, and I like to ask questions. And these questions need to be answered. You know, like with the vaccine, let's wait. I didn't say not to take it. I said let's just wait. It's untried. It's experimental. Let's wait and see, you know, what happens before you run to take something just because the media and the government is threatening you and brainwashing you. You know, use your critical thinking before you inject something experimental into your body. And we've seen all of these people. You know, I had somebody who, this is off topic a bit, but someone who told me that they were registering their kid for a softball team. And before they could be accepted, get this, the kid had to have an electrocardiogram. Can you, I mean, like, come on, like, where are we? Do you see? Like, this has never been demanded before. Something is rotten in Denmark. So anyway, questions need to be asked, investigations need to be made, and then people can conclude whatever the data and the facts show, and not what they want to assume. All right, I'll leave it there. Let's go to the Purim story. The Purim holiday is coming up this Saturday night in Israel and Sunday. Well, I guess all over the world, actually. Saturday night and Sunday, and we will have Shushan Purim, which is an extra day of Purim for the walled cities like Jerusalem and others, another few cities in Israel. But quickly, briefly, we only have about 15 minutes. Tell our listeners what the story is about in a nutshell, and then what we need to learn from it that we might be seeing today happening.
Okay, Purim is first of all, it's a lovely holiday. It's all joyful. There's nothing negative. There's nothing bad about Purim. Basically, it's the classic story of they tried to kill us, we prevailed. And the rest of it is history.
And let's eat.
Well, actually, there's
they
no
tried to kill us. We won. Let's eat.
We just eat. I mean, it's just a normal meat. But okay. What's really fascinating about Purim is a few aspects. First of all, it's the book that describes Purim is named after a woman, so it's one of these exceptional instances where a woman was the prime mover of the whole issue surrounding the holiday. That's very important because, how do you say Chazal in English?
Our sages.
Our sages, thank you. Sorry about that. Our sages made a very big point in the Talmud of discussing this issue that prior to Purim, there was while women are prominent in the Bible, in the Old Testament, so-called,
in the Torah,
they're not that prominent. They're not the leaders. It's true that God said to Abraham, whatever Sarah says to you, listen to her. And the reason given for that is because in terms of prophets, she was a bigger prophet than he was. But we always see the women as in a so-called secondary role in most of these things throughout most of the Bible. In the book of Esther, the woman is the leading role. And that's very important, and the Talmud makes a big, big point of displaying that importance. That is a central issue here. And it's not just a central issue, but people need to be aware. And for those who are familiar with the text, she says, fast for three days. When were those 3 days? They were on the opening night of Pesach, of Passover. So the opening night of Passover, we're not allowed to fast. So for her to say that, she had to have an enormous authority to be allowed to say that and for that to be accepted. And it was totally accepted. There was no exception to that. So that emphasizes the vast authority that she had and how important what she said really was, both at the time and since then. And the other aspect that I want to mention, I mentioned at the very beginning, that really is the, how shall I say it, the opening salvo of what today is called anti-Semitism. People are not aware. The phrase anti-Semitism, the word or the phrase, depending on how you write it, within a hyphen, without a hyphen, or whatever, the phrase began in the 19th century. It was a journalist that invented the term. By the way, many Arabs are insulted by it to this day because they consider themselves Semites as well. Semites, the word means descendants of Shem, the son of Noah. And of course, all of us meaning the Jews, the Arabs, and etc., all of us here in this area are descendants of Shem, the Noah's son. So they take exception to that word. I'm not going to go into that. That's semantics. I don't think that's of any significance. But this was really the opening salvo of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism has developed over the centuries. Remember, this was 2,400 years ago, approximately. One of the things that I've always found fascinating is our ability to know the exact times, dates, and etc. of everything that happened during that time, even though it was so long ago. When I lived in England, I used to make a point of laughing at my non-Jewish colleagues, saying that we were writing books that lasted till today, while you people were still eating one another in the forests. But that's just incidental and an incidental point. The book of Esther, for those who actually can read it, and I would strongly suggest reading it in the original, not in translation, anyone who can, it's a fascinating book. It's very short. It's fascinating both in terms of the political processes that are described there. A gentleman who has become famous over the last few years as a philosopher of conservative philosophy wrote a book many years ago called The Dawn, which describes the political processes that appear in the book of Esther. They are fascinating. We don't have time now to go into them. Very interesting. The basis there is both that's described in the book is both in terms of political processes, social processes, economic processes, and spiritual process. And in that sense, the book is rather unique, even in the Bible, to display all of those at once and to display them in a way that anyone can understand if they just simply make the effort.
Okay, so lessons learned. Usually these holidays fall so many times where something is happening and it really has a lot of relevance, especially. There's always relevance, but especially at the time period. You want to say something?
I'm trying to figure out what you're trying to say.
Meaning, like, we're talking about anti-Semitism, how the, you know, Persia in those days, it was the king owned 127 provinces, basically a large part of the world. And there was this huge anti-Semitism where people were sharpening their knives and their swords and they were going to go out and kill Jews.
Well, they were allowed to do that. They
yes.
were even commanded to do that in
yes.
a certain sense.
Yes.
And again, it's very interesting because they were, as opposed to Pharaoh, for instance, who only wanted to kill the males, Haman demanded to kill everyone. Again, it's very similar in that sense to the Palestinian Authority and Hamas, who demand to kill all Jews everywhere, all over the world. Again, a common lie told by American news organizations as if it's only the Jews in Israel. They demand in their charters, both of them, both organizations, both Fatah and Hamas are identical, demand to kill all Jews all over the world, wherever they are. It has nothing to do with Israel whatsoever, the state of Israel. So and that began with Haman, who made that, who changed that description. You know, Pharaoh only wanted to kill the males and retain the females as sex slaves. Haman wanted to kill them all of us. And his excuse for that was that he was a descendant of Amalek, a tribe of evil people, of evildoers.
Who many say, by the way, that we are fighting today through the Hamas?
Well, that's an interesting point. We do not know how to recognize today Amalek. As Amalek, during the Nazis' time, was the Nazis Amalek? So today, is it Hamas that's Amalek? I think all of the people that use evil to promote their way of thinking, they are descendants of Amalek, even if they are not descendants in terms of genealogy. They're descendants in terms of the philosophy of life. So all of these people that make a point of using evil, I think, are the spiritual descendants of Amalek, and all of these people need to be eliminated, very simply. These are people that cause harm to all of humanity,
aka
the
terrorists.
For instance, yes.
Okay.
Of course, it's not just the terrorists. I mean, if you look at, we're just looking at an example that's far from us. For instance, the horrible tragedy that occurred in Africa, in Rwanda. What was it? 20 years ago, between two tribes where hundreds of thousands of people were murdered for no reason whatsoever. This is an act of Amalek. This is not something that there is any excuse for that kind of action towards anybody, by anybody. It doesn't matter if Jews are necessarily involved or not in that sense. Anyone who uses evil, clearly uses evil for nefarious purposes, is somehow a spiritual descendant of Amalek, and these people need to be eliminated. That is a clear stipulation of God. There is no way,
aka the terrorists. All right, Dr. Mordechai Ben Menachem. Anything else you want to say about the Purim holiday? Or we'll end it here.
Not really. Another comment. Everybody associates it with the custom of costumes and dressing up and things like that. That's a relatively late thing, not practiced by all of the different groups around of Jews around the world. It's nothing. It's very, very much not central to the holiday. It's just a way of having fun
and to loosen up and be somebody who you aren't usually. That's why they wear masks, and because we. It's a part of the theme also of the Purim holiday. And saying that, I want to wish all of our listeners a very joyous Purim holiday, which is coming again on Saturday night, the, let's see, that comes falls on the 23rd of March and Sunday, which means we will not be doing a live show next week. But we wish you all a very happy and joyous Purim holiday, a safe holiday for everyone, and a joyous holiday for everyone. Unless you want to say something, I'll sign off, Dr. Mordechai Ben Menachem.
I wanted to just add one thing that, again, people in other places are not necessarily aware of this. One of the things that I find most fun about the Purim holiday is what we call sending food parcels to friends, around, the various friends. Just people make things like might be fruit preserves, or it might be pickled things of different natures, or it might be cooked food or something, and we run around like madmen and give it out to all of our friends. It's just tremendous fun.
Yes, and I will be delivering one, God willing, full of my famous peanut butter chocolate chip cookies that I bake.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
I do not like peanut butter. Thank you.
All right. So then I'll leave that one out for you. All right. I'm going to wish everybody a very, very lovely Chag Sameach, a happy holiday, a happy Purim holiday. We should all be safe. We should all have joy, be with our families, and have a joyous holiday and have peace. And we're praying for the safety of our soldiers who are defending the borders of Israel and the people of Israel. God bless them and our emergency workers. And Hashem, God should please bring home the hostages soon, healthily, happily, hurriedly, and with a huge sanctification of God's name and a decisive victory. Please, God, it should be. You've been listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, everyone. I want to thank you very much for being with us. And thank you, Dr. Mordechai Ben Menachem, and happy Purim holiday to you.
Thank you. Everyone should have fun. Purim is a time to have fun.
And learn from the holiday. Take the lessons and apply it to today. Thank you so much, everybody. Be well.